Good morning. Tuesday, July the 12th, 2016. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners General Discussion. 9 a.m. and I don't see anything particular on the agenda, so do you have anything, Commissioner?
No.
Care? Nothing?
No.
Have any report on vacation?
No.
Commissioner Heck?
No.
Commissioner Heck?
Hey.
You have
something? I certainly do, by cracky. Got an update. I think you all got it as well from planning. OLCC recreational approved cannabis sites, mm-hmm. And there's now it was
19
in the county. So, to me, we need to come up with. Some focus on what we need to have some discussion what the heck we're doing with this cannabis stuff as far as zoning goes and RR5 goes and all the other kind of thing.
Well,
this is the front end. We're in the middle right now of some of the stuff.
We held our town halls, as you know, and all the comments have been submitted to Julie Schmelzer, who is comparing and contrasting the state regulations with our county zoning codes and to determine what it is that we actually can or cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
And then as to prioritizing as to what the feedback was from those, we've received just about as much feedback in emails and phone calls, mm-hmm. as we have at the meetings. So she is keeping all those comments together, and we'll be preparing and submitting a report to us. So I anticipate that to be in the next week or so.
Okay. Yeah, because we're getting to the point now too where the 3% issue is.
Well, that is a separate issue.
Yeah, but it's I think it's related. I mean, the whole, even as mentioned, cannabis.
It's related, yeah. But we've already got an ordinance on that, and I think that's already on the agenda, isn't it? For legal? Have you already got that ready?
I don't know.
I thought they had that ready. I will check.
I don't know that we've got a first reading.
Yeah, but they have a date that they were going to do it.
Yeah, first reading. They haven't seen a draft.
Pardon?
We haven't finalized a draft for first
right.
reading.
And they were making one more change on that draft, so I will talk to them on that.
We have seen a draft. We just haven't finalized.
Yeah, we've seen the draft a couple of times, actually. So I will ask them, because I thought they had dates that they were going to bring it in.
They may have, Cheryl.
Yeah.
I think that's important that we have a timeline for both.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Both whatever the ordinance was going to be for land use, if we're going to do one, but certainly the 3%. We need it.
But because we've already gone with the draft portion and doing the 3% because of the deadline on that, that legal has that one. The other portion Julie is working on, as I said, comparing and contrasting it, mm-hmm. with our current land use codes and the state requirements to see what we can and cannot do.
Okay.
Well, we haven't finalized whether or not if there's an RR5 ordinance. That doesn't technically have to go to the voters. I'm in favor of it going to the voters probably on the ballot, but it doesn't. That's not a requirement of the process. It would probably be referred because it's pretty well threshold to do so, but get that process and see the stakeholders, in my opinion. So the timelines for those will be the same.
Yeah.
If we were looking at sending it to the voters.
Well, we are not required to send the zoning ones in a general election. We can do that in May if we find that we need to do that. Some of the things we thought that we could do, we can't already.
Like what?
Well, when it comes to the fencing, we thought maybe we would have some control over the fencing. We have none over that in regards because that is a state safety, Oregon safety, building safety, thank you. Mm-hmm. Building safety rule, and just OLCC just adopted that. So for us to even request OLCC to change it, other than it's going to have to change legislatively. So that's something that we couldn't do, but we could have it changed legislatively, which we would have to lobby for. So
we've got the 7-foot fence with a foot of tin on the bottom or a foot of plastic on the top.
Right. And so what it is, where the conflict comes in is our code is at 7 feet, you have to get a permit anything over 7 feet.
Mm-hmm.
The state requires an 8-foot fence, which then, of course, an 8-foot fence needs to be engineered. Well, the reason for that is, and we thought that was just something OLCC had come up with. It's not. The engineered fence, the 8 feet is what they came up with. They could have come up with 7 or 6 or whatever, but they came up with the 8 feet, which then requires the engineering, mm-hmm. which is an Oregon State Building Safety requirement. It's not an OLCC requirement. So a legislative fix for that would be for OLCC to, for the legislature to pass legislation telling the OLCC you don't need an 8-foot fence, a 7-foot fence will suffice. That way, they don't need a permit. They don't have to have an engineered fence. All this kind of stuff would go away. All of that consternation about that last foot
mm-hmm.
would be gone. And I think that would go a long way is towards eliminating.
You have to keep it visually buffered. And so there's still going to be that. I mean, they're not always just a foot. A lot of times it's like a 3-foot black mesh.
Right.
Because the plants are so doggone tall.
I don't know. That's just it. It's not really hiding anything. Everybody knows what it is. Everybody knows what it is.
So yeah, for
they,
sure.
They know what's there. So
it's just unattractive.
It's unattractive. So if they required, they say, for instance, if they required a 7-foot fence, but it has to be a standard fencing material, which would be chain link with the stuff in it, those aluminum strips or wood or bamboo even, or, you know, something other than plastic or used tin roof material that I've seen. So anyway, that's one that we could go in and say what are fences being required, but again, if we start saying you require these kinds of fences around the agricultural crop of cannabis, then it's okay, agricultural crop of squash.
Yeah, and
agricultural crop of corn.
But that's where this lunacy comes to play. As
well, lunacy is, as it's in our code. We have the agricultural
but
use
it,
in
it,
our code.
It applies to the state is saying that it was an 8-foot fence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Why don't you get rid of that stink thing? I mean, why do we have to? Nobody fences corn. I would much rather see a cannabis plant growing rather than 8 foot of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a fairly common input from people that are living in these areas where they're
mm-hmm.
growing an RR5, which happens to be a 1.6 acre.
Right.
And they've got this big old plastic fences around mm-hmm. them. And to see that just for the neighborhood beautification aspect
right.
would make more sense. So, but I think, you know, as long as we're moving on that and trees moving on that, I'm
fine
with that. There's a timeline for that. So.
Yep.
I don't think we have a set agenda, and I completely agree with you. I think the intent of the legislature was to take care of these anomalies, which were going to be a grow every once in a while,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, you know, these neighborhoods that are just fenced entirely. Everybody's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
To the one
well,
guy
particularly
who
the
had this fence, you know, he looks like an anomaly, although
mm-hmm.
his property value going down because everybody else is doing kind of a shoddy job. Not all the fences are bad, but some of them are really nice. But I agree. I'd much rather look at a plant for 90 days. How long are they out there?
Yeah.
You know, they're big, beautiful plants. You know they're there.
Well, that's a silly.
You're not.
Everybody knows what's behind that plastic.
Right.
You know, it's a big deal. So, but yeah, there's got to be something better.
There is a security element, I think, for a lot of these people in consideration so that they don't know necessarily how many are back there. Maybe, but I don't know. It seems weird that they do them right out in front. You know, like I said, and it was misunderstood over there, how back in the day when it wasn't legal, people were doing it, but they were doing it in the back 40 where nobody
yeah.
could see
yeah.
it, nobody could smell it.
Yeah.
It was you didn't do it on an R5
right.
1 acre parcel
because
you knew your neighbors are going to know all about it.
Sure.
See, the issue didn't arise with the medical marijuana. That's been in place, 17 years? We didn't have that issue. Where it came in was the recreational, when they started putting all this other stuff in and made the recreational legal. So we started having the issue and the complaints.
It seems like there's probably some sort of a legal precedent, like under the right to farm, as an agricultural commodity requiring that visual barrier. I can't think of anything else, maybe than a slaughterhouse. respectful on that in the view of the public. But what other things, strawberries, all these other agricultural products, you don't have to provide a visual barrier to just the production side.
Well, like you say, it's a green plant, and when they harvest it, they go cut the whole plant, it's gone. I have left a stubble like corn.
Yeah.
And that's usually 1,920 days and you're done.
So maybe that is an element of some, maybe at the end of this, before the legislature starts up again in February, maybe by the end of the year, we put that on a list of one of the things.
I already talked to Michelle about it.
I'm talking to the whole legislature, not just to a member of it.
Okay.
And segueing that in, do we want to, as the BCC, to send a letter to the governor not to abolish that joint committee?
Because, implementation.
Oh, because Measure 91?
Yeah, we have a lot of...
Committee?
There's still issues.
Sure, there's a lot of issues.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. We could do that.
That would be a good idea. Okay. At least know where we're at when we spoke. And we're certainly involved.
They should hold a meeting down here. They're going to take their show on the road like the OTC and ROBC.
Yeah. Welcome. Yeah, okay. Another one is the, is there a possibility of us expressing our concerns to the governor and the legislature regarding the apparent secrecy of the boom of medical marijuana grows that have no local accountability? And I mean, can we get some kind of reporting? We know that we have in Josephine County, we know we have 19 recreational grows.
Mm-hmm.
How many medical grows do we have?
I think we can find out the gross number, we just can't find out who they are.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm taking a number. Are those 60 grows, have they been visited by the OLCC?
No, that would be OAS.
I mean,
it's Oregon Health Authority.
Have they been visited by them? Is there any kind of...
We can make a request and find out.
Yeah, I would think it would be... Because right now it's just this big vacuum that we don't have any idea.
That statistic that came out like a year or two ago, the number of cardholders in Josephine County was like 4,600?
Something like that.
5,000?
And it's gone up since I think it's up to about 8,000 right now.
Is it?
Yeah, we have one sick puppy.
One in 10?
Yeah.
My legal counsel asked me to approach the board. Is it appropriate to ask the question in this meeting? Or?
Certainly, if
yeah. Sure.
Okay. Sure. The question was, I got a call from one of the principals in the land use hearing next week, and they asked that it be streamed live, which technically we can do, but we haven't done it in the recent past. So I need some direction from the board. Should we make an exception, and should we change our policy?
The reason we haven't done it in the past, it isn't a matter of wide public concern. So when you start broadcasting it publicly or live streaming it, the potential for their notification that people of interest aren't just people who come to the hearing, it's different. And the potential for more people to want to be notified and maybe potentially at an expense to the planning office. The reason we haven't done it in the past is because it's not an issue of wide public concern.
Is this one broad enough that we should stream it?
How much labor is involved in this from your...
If we do it as we normally have, we'll have someone monitor it. But that's it. Is it an evening meeting? Land use hearing?
Could be all day.
Yeah. No,
starts in the morning time at 9 and goes at 9 at noon, but it could be opened up to the afternoon as well.
Okay. So we'll lose that amount of time for someone to monitor the cameras.
The challenge for me is that we set a precedent if we're going to do land use hearing. Who's making the determination that it isn't for everybody? If we were doing a UDB, that's a wide public concern. That's an obvious one. But a specific location of a comp plan zone change really has a specific area of impact. And so for me, the answer is no, but
I mean, the audios are available, right?
The audios are available.
What was your reason for wanting that done?
I felt it wasn't my role to talk to them. I was just responding to a message. I asked legal counsel what they thought because of the, we hadn't done it in the past, make a special change for this. So he said bring it to the board.
He actually called in and I referred him to you. He has attorneys in Portland that he would like to have on a speakerphone. And if it's live stream, then they can watch the hearing as it goes along.
So perhaps since it's not our policy to do so, and this is of a more narrow interest, would it be one of those things that we could do it? Would we charge a fee for it? Since we have to take someone away from it?
I would, in this particular situation, if we're going to live stream it, let's live stream it from the beginning of it, not in the middle of it. And right now we're coming in the middle of it. So there's an audio available. If you'll listen to the audio, that's fine. But again, setting some sort of a precedent of saying, well, if there's a big enough human cry from whomever, we'll come in the middle. We don't have any previous. Right now. Well, why right now? If they want to listen to it, that's great. If they don't want to listen to it, that's great too. But I'm not real keen on starting the videoing of it in the middle of this whole process.
Well, I can. Like Simon said, if it's of general public interest, like our planning commission meetings or urban growth boundary or any of those kinds of things,
well,
I see
like
where we need to do it.
Or something like
but
that.
When it's something like this where it's an individual for their convenience, you know, yeah, we'll do it, but you'll need to pay for the time of someone doing it.
I think we need to yeah. If we have the ability,
I mean,
to
we have the ability to do
sure.
it, but to
but
convenience
you. But it's not a
you.
Service that we typically provide.
No.
And if you
I don't think he was asking for free because I told him there would be a charge. But he's trying to do it so the attorneys who are...
No, that makes sense, I suppose, that they want to be able to... It's like a Skype kind of a situation.
Yes, that's what he's trying
to do. But
he'd
be doing it online and they'd be on the phone.
That's the purpose of it.
The TV would be muted, so he could just... That's kind of different than just generally trying to publicize the thing.
Right. I'm inclined to say yes, but they have to pay for the time that it costs your department.
So $35 an hour.
Whatever you use that.
Whatever your department needs to charge to cover the cost of doing that is fine.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks, John.
Am I on?
You're on.
I'm trying to make people aware of, and people that correspond with, and on this, the county staff anyway. I would like to see us do, especially in this climate, to have some public coordinated recognition of the service that our law enforcement community provides to the county, include the county sheriffs, the local PD, and community corrections. They're all law enforcement officers. And just to have some sort of community thank you, community recognition, the community, so that they understand we do support the whole idea, not every
mm-hmm.
individual, but
mm-hmm.
we support the idea of law enforcement, and we need to have that, and we thank them for standing in this gap between us and those who have no regard for law. But I've talked to Dave just real quickly, and of course he's mentioned one on paper hanger right now, it's in some open Brookings too. But he thought it'd be a great idea.
I think it's a good idea.
Okay.
I talked to Judge Baker about it yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to get back together on that too, because she agrees the same thing. That we need to be a little more proactive in regards to the support. How the shootings that occurred in Dallas affect other people who are in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that is really, there's any way to calculate it. There's not any way to measure it. but it definitely does affect them, particularly if they've ever been in a similar type of situation,
oh, sure.
Like a hostage situation or fire or gun, or they shoot someone or someone shoots
or
them.
Or standing guard at a parade,
right.
And everybody's cheering and everybody's having a great
right.
time.
And it gives them that other dimension of, for lack of a better word, anxiety or fear.
Hmm.
Anxiety becomes fear. And sometimes thinking that just because you put a badge on, that suddenly you might as well just to put a target on, you know. And I know I just asked my son-in-law about that. He's been a police officer 22 years now in Portland. And he said that, you know, being a police officer when he started was, you know, everybody was supportive
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it was
yeah.
great. And you know, you did good things for people. And once in a while you had to put yourself in harm's way. And so he says, and they used to have, like, 2,000 or 3,000 people apply all the time
mm-hmm.
wanting those kinds of jobs. He says, we're lucky to get 10.
Really?
He says, people don't want those jobs anymore because they're so stressful and so dangerous. And the people that are already in the departments already feel that, and yet they try not to acknowledge it. So they're
mm-hmm.
kind of trying to stuff this down because they're supposed to be protectors of the
right.
public instead of being fearful. And so it's become a very anxiety-prone occupation.
Right.
And certainly a dangerous one. And that was my conversation with Judge Baker yesterday about it, as to what, you know, if she had any ideas or thoughts on how we could go forward. And she says, yeah, we need to be doing that. Let's get some thought, you know. So I'll be getting back with her. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Do you then want to just take this ball and see if we can get something organized between the sheriff's department and
I can do that. I can do that.
Because I think it would be a.
Is it possible to do something in conjunction with the centennial celebration in October? I mean, I really don't have anything other than a date on that issue.
Okay, we cancel the centennial thing. I'm not doing the centennial
yeah.
thing.
Could be any support for it.
But the Chamber of Commerce has said, well, they want to go forward with it, so.
That's
they
great.
May.
Go forward with
fine.
It. That's great, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If they can raise the money to do it and have the staff to do it, then fine. But
I think waiting until October would be a little
right, right, right. right.
Kind of thing. But to have
it just seems as though maybe if you could
you
get
know,
momentum for one, you could get momentum as a joint celebration of the longevity of not just the courthouse as a symbol of, you know, justice
mm-hmm.
in the community.
Yeah.
Thanking those
it
people
tied
who
in
stand
too.
By
yeah.
that every day. I think you could probably tie the two together really, really well.
Yeah.
That could, or also we could have some kind of a thing at the fairgrounds, the opening of the fair or something too. We have the fair.
Yeah, it's a pretty short window.
It is a short window,
yeah.
But that could be done through public
yeah.
safety.
I think it's a good idea, Commissioner Heck.
So and my last idea.
I endorse it. Whatever we can do
okay,
to
good.
Make it happen.
Good. And my last question has to do with the situation with public health and all care. So where are we at on that? Everybody got sort of blindsided
yeah.
by their...
Yeah, the governor's comments. What
yeah.
happened while Simon was gone? As you recall, we had our executive session here where we talked about it, and I said I would meet with Ryan Johnson and Dave Watson in regards to costs, long-term, short-term investment benefit, what is the going rate for commercial, et cetera. So I did. Terry contacted them, set up the meeting, and they came in with information on that, and they had both done their homework on it. And the conversation was such that the going rate for commercial lease currently is $2.10 a square foot. And the lease that they had put forth required $13,000 upfront. Then it was $2.10 rent plus management and maintenance and all of those costs shared of the building, which put us way over the $2.10. It put us up to like 4 or 5 times the cost of what the public health department currently is experiencing, and which is kind of out of the question because the public health can't afford that. But the other issue was, and I haven't talked to Connie, but what Dave said is that when he talked to Connie, is that if if any government agency goes over the commercial rate, then it makes us subject to taxes, property tax. So I don't know what statute that is, but Connie researched it and said that's what would happen. So anything over $2.10 as a total cost is going to make us subject to paying property tax. And I think it probably has something to do with, you know, competing in the commercial market kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But so that is totally out of the question. So what I did have a conversation the other day, basically, and Diane has, you know, recused herself from this, but I told her what the findings were. And I said the only thing that we can do is the board can do two things. And I said we haven't been able to do those two things because one of us was gone at some point in the last 3 weeks. I said what we can do is we can say, okay, we want to go forward, but we will make you a counteroffer, and this is our counteroffer, and you know, that's what we can pay, and that's what we're willing to do. Or we can just refuse it, period, one of the two. And I couldn't see another option. You know, if we want to do it, we have to dictate the terms that we'll be able to afford, or we just simply can't do it because we're just going to stay there for the time being because we can't see in the foreseeable future when the public health is going to have to move, one of the two. And she said she understood. She said that's okay. She's perfectly okay with whatever we do. She has not expressed any consternation either way. Well, it just so happened that I got a phone call from Doug Flo, and I believe that was on Thursday. I can't remember what day it was now. Last 2 weeks ago. And he had sent an invitation probably to all of us to go to this event with the governor. Well, I was going to be out on vacation. I was going to have a house full of people. I couldn't see where I would be able to make it. And so I declined the invitation. Well, he called and he said, we really want you to come. And I said, well, Doug, I can't. I said, I'm off on vacation. I said, I think another commissioner's going to be attending. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I really appreciate the invitation, but I cannot be there. And he said, well, he says, have you approved the lease? And I said, no, Doug, we've not approved the lease. I said, we are doing our due diligence and research on that. And I said, I have met with our building operations person and our property person. And I said, but I cannot bring it back to the board until such time as we have a full board. And I said, Simon has been gone, and I am gone. We'll be gone next week. I said, it'll be the following week, which is this week, before we will be able to even have a discussion about it. And he says,
we're not signing a lease anyway. It was a letter of intent.
Right. Well, that's what I meant. I'm just shortening the vernacular.
Well, I think that's a really important distinction.
Yeah, but for us,
it's... Even at that point, we weren't even signing a lease.
I'm shortening the vernacular. So any type of agreement we're not going to enter into until we have that discussion. So he was not happy. He was pissed off on the phone, very terse at that point. And he says, well, you know, the governor's coming down. I said, yes, I know for the dedication of your building. And anyway, okay, goodbye, you know, so we hung up. Well, I called Diane and I told her, I said, I had this conversation with Doug Flo. He was not happy about us not approving their letter of intent for the lease, et cetera. And she said, well, that's, you know, I can understand that. And I said, but I don't want any mention of it that day. I said, so, because I knew she was speaking. I said, so be sure that's not in your speech. She says, it's not. I took it out already because we had that conversation a couple weeks prior. So she didn't have it in her speech. So before, when she went over there to the event that day and talked to, I can't remember who it was that she talked to. Was it Josh? I think it was Josh that she talked to. And she said, be sure no one mentions that in their speeches because we have not approved the letter of intent. There's actually some concerns about what's in there that we have not had time to work on yet. He says, okay, so he adjusted his notes. Well, nobody told the governor, and she gets up there and makes this announcement about this fabulous partnership, and we're going to take 3 floors of the next building, and blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, so obviously Doug didn't get the message to her that we had not signed any agreement, and that may not happen. So anyway, I got a phone call from Josh Ballack, over the weekend, not over the week, I think it was this week on Wednesday, I think he called me. And he says, Cheryl, I just called to apologize. He said, I had told the governor's aide that, you know, that we didn't have a signed agreement. And he said she just, they changed the speech and gave her the copies, but she took the wrong copy and read it. Now, whether that's the case, I don't know, but that's what they said, and they apologized. And he says, so we issued a press release which mentioned that, you know, some future activity with the public health department was an option. But anyway, he said our press release didn't say what the governor said, which he sent me a copy, and it didn't. The press release did not say what the governor had said. So anyway, it ended up, fortunately, I read the articles in the press, and it wasn't as damaging as I thought it could have been, because I think with their press release, they kind of fixed it. But
isn't the couriers, I didn't read the article, but I just saw the headline, looked as though, I mean, my parents referenced, oh, so the public health department is moving into it. So it was construed whether the details of the article spelled out otherwise. And I said, No. We are a long way from arriving at a consensus.
Exactly.
But frankly, the philosophy of the idea of co-locating is still there. It has merit.
Yep.
And we haven't rejected it.
It's just, frankly, the number.
Implementation.
I don't think that it's insurmountable for us to figure out a way. Because when I talked to Ryan about this, I said, or Diane, I talked to Diane, I didn't talk to Ryan. I said, I know what the number is. It's what you're paying now. We're not spending a dime more than what you're paying right now to be housed, whether it's inefficient or not. You can't say that I'm going to move to a more efficient location, but I'm going to pay more to be there. No, it's got to be more efficient, lower cost. You're going to incur $100,000 or something like that to move public health. You've got to be able to depreciate that over 5-10 years. You know, mm-hmm. every year you're still paying on that move you did 10 years ago. So it's not something we can just try out for a year or two and then scramble to find someplace else. It's got to be a set number. I think we can change the proposed letter of intent to say, look, This is our best offer. We don't need to save a whole bunch. We don't need to make any money, but we can incur additional costs Mm-mm. to make this happen. Mm-mm. This is the bottom line. Take it or leave it. Not in a negative way. Not in a combative way. It's just every dollar we spend on housing them is a dollar they don't have for their programs. They don't have for their staff. That's where the money goes. And so we're not going to detract from money to go to services to be in a nicer, newer, co-located location.
No.
And I know, I think they can understand that.
Mm-hmm. I think they can. And my point being that if we are going to be co-locating with them and they continue to provide additional staffing and those kinds of things, and we're sharing the revenues, as the revenues increase, they're going to get more revenues as well.
Absolutely.
They have a public health component in the health plan.
Yeah.
So by having us there, it fulfills their component, and they can grow the program, which means they can grow the revenue.
Yeah.
We can't grow the program, but they can grow the program.
I think that there's what I understood is that they sent out, I think Diane mentioned this, is that what was there, that letter of intent that they were, that's what they sent to everybody. You know, that's not the same relationship that they're going to have with us. So we need to sharpen our pencils and say exactly what, how much space. And Diane said, well, maybe we don't need to have animal control and blah, you know, mm-hmm. the things that are not client-based. They're general public health county services, but they're not. So I said, well, that makes a lot of sense. Let's parcel out those elements that are not all care client based, reduce our footprint, have it specific to that need, and we'll go from there and say, well, that's got to be, you know, blah 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 cents per square foot, and that's our offer.
Yeah, and I met with Doug yesterday, I think it was, and he was, however it got to this point, I mean, he was very willing to work together to arrive at a reasonable rate for the county.
But I think that if we, because he was in public health before, so he had that, he's got that awareness of what's involved in that too. So, but I think it would be good to have, whether it's Michael or whomever, so we get one focal point rather than having four different or five different ones.
Right.
And we speak through Mike, and to have the precursor for Mike knows, this is a great idea. We want to see it make it work. Our problem is simply the cost.
Mike
Walker.
Mike Walker. Thank you.
And just to have, you know, have him understand that we want this thing to work. But the problem is the cost. So how can we make this thing?
Well, he gave us a redlined, and I will get a copy to you, a redlined, where he put some comments on their letter of intent.
Michael did? Or
Watson.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, at that meeting. He gave me one. So I will give that to you so you can see what notes he put on there.
Okay.
And then if we want to put together another meeting with legal counsel to go over it, I think that would be a good idea, so we can go over it and come up with what we might want to respond with. So could we do that?
It's scheduled for Wednesday.
It is scheduled for Wednesday.
I think Mike makes a lot of sense to do this, but we can't leave out really anybody. Even if Mike is the focal point. Ryan Johnson's also going to bring our information. The fact that, well, just because you move public health out of there doesn't mean that you get to stop paying for that building.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, it's not 60 cents a square foot because you're not incurring, you know, the custodial cost, the electricity, all those things. But there's still a cost, like there is to the juvenile shelter and detention facility, for keeping a non-inhabited building maintained.
Mm-hmm. So, and he discussed that at the meeting last week.
It's a moving cost. Mm-hmm. So we've got to
Ryan and
factor in those costs.
Mike,
and I don't even know if there's other things that I'm not thinking of, but could be. I don't know. We just need to go into this with our eyes. It's funny, almost to a degree, but if you think about, like, maybe more counties with more resources probably wouldn't bat an eye at that proposal and say, oh, but the greater good, it outweighs. And when we agree to that, but we're not in a fiscal situation where we can just ignore those costs and saddle a board in a public health department for 10 years down the road. Who knows what the changes are going to be in the whole system.
Right.
There might be legislation next session that says you're out, public health is no longer a requirement of the counties, it's being turned over to the CCOs, or CCOs are no longer the issue because they're not doing that well across the state. Hence the reason the governor came down here. She didn't go someplace. She came where we're having successes with our CCOs.
Mm-hmm.
But the legislature's looking at this and say, if you aren't reducing costs of the healthcare system, we're going to have to switch the model up.
Mm-hmm.
What if we hitch our wagon to a star that may not be there in a couple of years? Or
well, the pressure being, when I attended the health committee meetings up there to put together the modernization of the health system, they're trying to regionalize the public health. And I can see where that might work in certain areas. In rural areas, it's going to be very difficult. But initially, they were talking about regionalizing them to more populated areas with bigger health departments, which would have meant Josephine and Jackson County would have been combined, Kersakui would have been, Curry would have been combined. So that's what they were looking at. And I objected at every meeting to them doing that. I said, how are people who need the system, who rely on a bus to get to the health department, going to be able to get to another county? Well, you know, they might have to have a little satellite office. So then why are you doing it? I mean, it's not, you know, it was very convoluted. But it was obviously very well controlled by the metropolitan areas because, you know, they could see these mega health departments for Multnomah and Washington County and, you know, Clackamas and Marion County, and, you know, they could see that. But for us, it wasn't going to work very well. But that was one of the things that they were doing, and they went ahead and passed the legislation. The legislation has been passed. I just saw the other day the final report that's come out on that. So I think that it would be the salvation of our public health department to have us combined with a CCO.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise they'll probably try to swallow us up with Jackson County. But what may happen is we may swallow Jackson County if we've got that arrangement already. Because this is, and the comment about that being a letter that they send to everybody, it may have been based on that, but there's nowhere else where public health is combined with a CCO. This would be the first one.
No, absolutely. We have an
It's a unique situation. So
I think that they're looking to have a broad base of tenants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Doug mentioned as well that he would have no problems at all saying putting into the contract of 180 day out. You know, so it's not that it is a 10-year contract, we're stuck for 10 years. He said, well, we could have 180 days.
Yeah.
So they're amenable to those things.
I think it's all.
Yeah.
It's all welcome.
Well, we have it. It's on the executive session for tomorrow. I will get that copy to you that Mike made the comments on. And then I will ask if Mike Watson and Ryan Johnson can be here tomorrow.
Yeah, that'd
be. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Very good.
Does it merit the county putting out some sort of a clarification?
I don't think so.
I think
that would muddy it and would probably hurt their feelings. Yeah. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to cause
a
problem.
Do it when we know what we're talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will we be here in
a
couple of weeks?
And
okay.
Because that's why I just let it go. You know. I mean, all care knew where we were. I talked to Doug. He wasn't happy about it, but. But I just flat told him, I said, I can't make a decision. I can't make a unilateral decision here. We don't have that. It has to be a board decision. So, okay. That's okay. Okay. Anything else, Commissioner Heck?
No, ma'am.
Okay. I have one thing here that I met with Elizabeth Esterbrook, who is the coordinator, Women's Veterans Coordinator with the Oregon Veterans Department. And we were talking about how women often have a difficult time identifying as a veteran, even though they've served in the military, and some of the issues that women are running into because people think a veteran and what conjures up is a male veteran, a soldier type of thing. Well, a lot of veterans are not the male veteran soldier type of veterans. And so a lot of the programs, people don't think in the way they need to be to accommodate women veterans. So she said that the state agency was considering having regional conferences, and I told her, I said, we'd be glad to have a regional conference here. I'll do it myself if I have to, but anyway, we've set a date. It's October the 27th, which is right before we wanted it right before Veterans Day, so it would raise awareness. And I've already arranged to have it at the Flower Building. We're going to, of course, limit the number who can attend, but she's going to help get it organized and participate in it. And what I wanted to know is if we would be able to commit any funds to help in putting this all together. So,
is Lisa involved in this whole thing?
Lisa is going to be involved, and I talked to her about it, so has Elizabeth. And I just confirmed the date yesterday, so I was going to go talk to Lisa today.
Okay.
About the date. So it's on a Thursday, October 27th.
So committing funds, I mean, we would be countywide, we would be committing funds and simply hosting the thing. I mean, having a facility.
Well,
that kind of stuff.
The fairgrounds, they'll still charge a thing. It's like $200 for the half of the flower building. It's $200 for that that we have to pay for, plus the printing of the programs and that kind of thing. So I'm going to try to get some other sponsors, but I'd like for us to be able to put the seed money in if we could do that.
Do we know how much this is and what the cost would be? Were it to raise $500 or?
I would like it if the county would put in $500 to sponsor it, and that would be for the building and for the printing of the various materials. I don't know if Lisa has anything in her budget. I think the state has some for their budget. Not a lot, but they do have some as well. And then I'm going to try to get a couple of private sponsors.
I mean, I'm just saying, if it's going to cost $1,000 to host this event, I would think that the VFW and these other veterans groups that are already in existence, that they would, this would be something that they would want to support.
That's what I'm going to try to do.
Yeah. And I see it as a resource of last input, but it doesn't matter where does the money come from.
Well, I think it's certainly a worthy cause.
Sure.
I don't know that public perception really plays into whether or not a veteran who qualifies gets veteran benefits. I don't think you have to convince Lisa Shipley's of the world whether or not a person, whether female or male, is a veteran and whether or not she's going to champion their ability to get...
No, it's not to do that. What it is that availability of services, psychological needs, there will be providers, there will be people putting on programs in regards to psychological needs, which are sometimes different than male veterans.
So this is like a vendor fair?
It won't be a vendor fair. It's going to be a conference, seminar type of conference.
Service awareness fair.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we will have speakers that talk about the various subjects. She said we may even have breakout groups, and depending on how many people that we can have to facilitate on some of those. But there will be different speakers. And I'm thinking that we'll probably have people from Curry, Klamath, Jackson counties.
Great.
And I'll be using their list as well as our own list of people. But it'll be service providers as well as people who can provide services directly to veterans. So, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where you say, well, you need veterans. Yeah, I know that. But for Sergeant Joan Smith to access this, for whatever the reason, I don't know what the reason is, there's this gap between knowledge of it and availing yourself of it. And it is, it is an issue, and I'm not sure how to meet that. This is really, to me, would be a good step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it could hurt.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Yeah.
I think the notoriety, even for people who don't attend, if you have the media buy-in of people saying, oh, okay, well,
yeah,
at least there's an opportunity to catch, find out about it, and putting Lisa's name out there, you know, so that people, oh, so there's a face and a name, somebody to call for more information.
Now, I know I know women veterans in various organizations. I mean, and there was one woman, well, in fact, several. I knew them for years, and they never said that they'd ever served in the military. It was one of those things that one served in World War II. She's 90-something. And it's like, wow, I didn't know that, you know.
Yeah.
And it's something that, and I said to her, I said, have you applied for any of your veteran benefits? Oh, I wouldn't qualify. I said, oh, yes, you would.
Mm-hmm.
I would? She's 90-some years old,
yeah,
you know, from World War II, and she doesn't even know that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what we're trying to change, is that there's so many women that don't know that they qualify for benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Good program.
Yeah.
So.
I think that from my point of view, there's a general willingness to, we can find the money where it comes from. I don't have any problem with stepping up and assisting, but also to have whatever that master budget is, $1,000, whatever it's going to be, and have these different veterans organizations see that too, and to say, this is in your people's best interest, so how about helping out financially in this thing?
Yeah.
Well, maybe the county's contribution is the facility or something to that effect. Can't make the fairground pay.
Well, yeah, because I've been communicating with Peggy on internet. I mean, on the email, and the room is going to cost $200. And I asked her about chairs and tables, and she hasn't come back to me yet on the chairs and tables.
As this is so new, just come back to us maybe with a more hardened, fast, and then we'll just, I mean, I'm supportive, so, but you just set the date yesterday, it's kind of early. I think, for me personally, I support it, whatever is necessary to get it done. We'll figure out a way to make it happen.
And I'm going
to
have a conference call with Elizabeth tomorrow morning also, so, okay.
Great.
Okey-doke. Anything else?
Not for me.
No?
Nope.
All right. And you didn't bring us back any sugar cane or anything?
No.
Okay. It's 9:51 and we are adjourned.